From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 22nd day of March 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vick. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. A bit later in the program, we'll take up the acreage shift. Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist here on campus, has taken a look at the historical data and tried to figure out whether there can, will, or should be a shift to soybeans in the upcoming prospective plantings report. We'll talk with him about that. We'll also take up the weather forecast. We'll do that with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City and check with the folks at the Clymers Agricultural Ethanol Production Facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, and see how they're doing this week right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Jackie Vick. She's at Stuart Peterson. Hey, thanks for being with us, Jackie. Glad to have you with us for the Wednesday.
Thanks, Todd.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that have been happening. I know you've likely been watching politics a little bit. What do we know about what's been happening and how that plays into our marketplace?
Well, it's very interesting. I don't know how many of our listeners pay any attention to the G20 meetings that we have. You know, it used to be the G8, it's now the G20, meaning the 20 largest economies in the world. And, you know, when they met last week, there were a lot of countries that were really unhappy that they didn't issue what they would call a free trade agreement. They didn't write a letter of that. And I think it's ironic. When I attended the Ag Outlook meeting a couple years ago, I went to a dinner on trade issues that we face. And the term free trade really took a different meaning. You know, when we think of free trade, it just means, you know, open borders between us. But it was shocking to me. In a lot of cases, they were paying us 6% import tax, you know, to ship their products here and charging us 30% tax to ship it back to them. I don't consider that to be free trade. I think free trade is if it's 30% to come to you, then it's 30% to come to us. And so, you know, China was the biggest complainer last week, and they by far have the least open country for trade at all. And so I just think it's interesting when you look at the way things are spun sometimes, you get the impression that we're being really bullheaded when it comes to trade and that we're out to try and hurt the U.S. And yet in reality, there's so many things that we don't know that go on underneath. And so I just think it's important that we recognize that we don't have all the information.
I'd like to stay kind of in some peripheral areas for the day that means so very much to agriculture and the global trade. We often talk about the U.S. dollar and the exchange rate. Have you been thinking about it very much?
Well, most definitely. You know, you've talked to me long enough to know that that's one of the number one things that I follow all the time. And I think that, you know, it's an easy thing for our U.S. farmers to not want to pay attention to or not pay attention to because we look at the board and we know we take basis off and we're right where we're at. But, you know, last week when we talked, I cautioned our people because, you know, they said they needed 10.25 to 10.90 for beans down in Brazil for the farmer to become a more aggressive seller. He's just dragging his feet. So I want to give you an exchange rate example, Todd. If the futures were at $10 and the Brazilian farmer got 3 real for every dollar and beans were equal to $9.60, okay? Now let's say the dollar gets stronger or the real gets weaker because it has the same impact either way, and the farmer now gets 3.2 real for every dollar with futures still at $10, he's getting $10.24. That's 64 cents more, and the futures never changed. And so I think that, you know, our farmers really have to recognize that, you know, they tend to focus on numbers. In other words, you know, I heard 10.25. That means futures have to go to 10.25 or futures have to go to 10.90. No, they don't. All that has to change is the relationship between the dollar and the real. You know, and if there's anything that's proven to me that I know last week I talked about they're not like us, Todd. I'm going to talk about they're not like us again. Safras and Mercado actually came out and sharply increased the acreage for full season corn. You know, you and I talked last week about full season corn and Safrina corn. They planted 13 million acres, which was up 34% from last year. And, you know, that corn is currently being harvested. So there's really no weather risk there anymore. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, how could that possibly happen? Well, you know, they had an early bean harvest down there this year, and, you know, the farmer double-cropped corn on his harvested bean acres. They're not like us. We can't do that. And so the overall potential impact to us, and, you know, we've really had robust corn exports. I mean, they've been good. Bean exports have been good. But, you know, we could see Brazil come into the export market with corn earlier than we normally would expect, and that could have some, you know, negative impact on 17, 18 exports. But I think we also have to be realistic. Things haven't changed much since I was down there in 2006. You know, they've added some stuff, but they're still limited to shipping one type of product at a time. And so, you know, their infrastructure hasn't changed very much. So in general, it's going to come down to, is the farmer going to remain a reluctant seller of beans and then decide to ship corn? But just like here, you know, corn is our favorite product. Well, down there, beans are their favorite product. So ultimately, this could have a big impact on us. Whether it will or not, it'll come down to, you know, what the Brazilian farmer decides to do.
Because you were there, do you have any idea whether they have very much land? Surely they do not, left to come into production.
Oh, well, that is not a correct statement, okay? They have a new frontier, basically. It's called Matapiba. And, you know, Bahia has been an area that they have expanded into over the last years. Well, this year, that represented 10% of the Brazilian bean production for 2017. And what they're doing is that this area that they can expand into is the Cerrado. It's like a savanna. It no longer is productive when it comes to cattle. So what they're doing is they're changing it into production land. And there's about 55 million acres sitting there that's Cerrado. Covers about four different states. And so what they do know, and a lot of the southern, you know, like Paraná farmers and stuff are very good at switching over savanna land. They're the ones coming up into the Matapiba. And yields are pretty low for the first couple of years. But then once the land really gets going and they get things done, the yields come right back up and they get close to, if not challenging, land that's been in production for a long time. So, you know, it's just astounding when you study what they have available to them. Now, again, we talk, you know, we're still talking about infrastructure here, but over the years, we know within the next 5 years, all those ports up north will be working and there'll be improvements in the ports in the south. So, you know, we just have to be prepared.
And finally, two topics completely different than what we've been talking about a little bit. Take up the beef scandal out of Brazil, if you know very much there, and probably a better look at the prospective plantings report in the U.S. too.
Yeah, well, that beef scandal in Brazil is pretty amazing. China, Chile, and the EU now have banned all imports of meat from Brazil. I don't know how many of our listeners know about it, but there's a Brazilian beef scandal accusing JBS and BRF of bribing inspectors and politicians to okay rotten meat for shipping. And they were basically using a way of trying to hide it. They are the largest red meat exporter in the world, and the majority of it goes to Europe. In fact, the way it was discovered is because they had a lot of people in Italy that got sick eating beef. And so, you know, if you look at our futures, it certainly has propped up our livestock futures in the idea that, you know, we're probably going to pick up some of those exports. That, you know, we never know what the story is going to be now. They only indicted 33 inspectors out of 11,000, you know, and 21 plants are affected. But they are very big plants. And we're all familiar with JBS because they're here in the United States, too. So I still think that people would buy from us because they'd feel confident in the way that we inspect our meat. And if you want to look at March acres, we've got a few early guesses out. Informer at 88.7 for beans, 90.8 for corn. Dr. Cordonier is at 89 on beans, 91 on corn. And the USDA at the Outlook Forum came in at 88 on beans and 90 on corn. So I still believe it's going to come down to weather, Todd. There's no question about it. Early spring, more corn. Later spring, more beans.
Hey, thanks, Jackie. Jackie Vakes, of course, is with Stuart Peterson, joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist. He's been thinking a little bit about the acreage debate as it relates to the prospective plantings report due out on the 31st of this month. Went back and did what he does best and took a look at the data to see how things have changed from 2011 through 2016 for corn and soybeans in particular. So let's go through the process. How many acres are there, and how has that changed in history over time to begin with?
In 2016, there were 94 million acres of corn, and that was the third highest number of acres of corn that we had. USDA is projecting that is going to go down to 90 million, which would be a 4 million acre decline. So we looked at the change from 2011 to 2016, which is about half of the increase during the 2011 to 2016 period is about half of what we are projecting to go down this time. So looking at where we gained and lost in those areas may provide some indication of what happens on corn. Soybeans were projected, in 2016 we had 83.4 million acres. We're projected to go up 4.4 million acres, so that would be another pretty large increase. That would be a record number of soybean plantings, and so we're, again, setting records on soybean acres as we did in 2016.
So you mine the data to try to figure out where these acres might change. I suppose it's important to know what has changed in the past. I made note that it looked like, and we knew this from some of the USDA reports, but your analytics gave us by county, there were some certain changes in the state of Illinois in particular, the northern part of the state for corn, which had been a lot more corn in the rotation than soybeans, changed from 2011 to 16.
Yes, and from 2011 to 2016 in Illinois, we lost 1 million acres of corn. Much of that came from the northern and central part of the state. We saw those areas move back to closer to a 50% corn, 50% soybean rotation, particularly in the central part of the state. We're still heavy corn-wise in the northern part of the state, but that million-acre reduction caused those percentages to come down relative to soybeans.
And they planted soybeans in those areas.
So we had a million-acre increase in corn and almost the same increase in soybeans. So it's almost a one-for-one shift, as you would expect in the state of Illinois.
Other areas of the Corn Belt that really had changes, and I'm thinking that both the corn and soybean acres went up in the Dakotas?
So if we're looking where we saw big increases, it was in the upper Great Plains, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota. So those areas were the ones that had both big corn acre increases and soybean acre increases. So both that North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota increased in both corn and soybeans. Likely most of those acres came at the expense of wheat, so it was a substitute from other crops and wheat to corn and soybeans.
And if you add all of that together and then say, okay, today where are more corn acres planted than soybean acres, which I think is what you wanted to do, and divide the corn by soybean, what do you come up with in the way of where that rotation might float closer to 50-50 than it is today?
So if you look at corn relative to soybeans, we're still the heaviest in northern Illinois, northeast Iowa, Wisconsin, and southern Minnesota still have pretty high corn acres relative to soybean acres. In the central part of the state, it's still more corn than soybeans. We have about 1.5 to 1.2 acres of corn for every acre soybean. So we're still heavier, or were in 2016, than soybeans in this part of the state. And if you go down to southern Illinois, they're heavier in soybeans than they are in corn.
So it looks like the prime corn-growing counties across the Midwest, across the Corn Belt, sweeping through central Illinois, northern Illinois, all of Iowa, parts of Minnesota, surprisingly enough to me, a lot of Wisconsin, and can actually put more soybean acres in this year. It's not the marginal areas that you would think at least in these terms.
So if you're looking at it just as a switch from corn to soybean acres and still having more corn acres than soybeans, those are the areas where the shift can occur. And actually, if you think about it, it's probably, if you're looking at a 4 million acre shift, a significant part of that has to happen in the heart of the Corn Belt, because you're going to have to have a big, you're going to have to have big, big shifts, and it can't all come from low producing areas because there's simply not enough acres outside of the Corn Belt.
Yeah, the point being, each and every county can contribute a little bit, but it doesn't all have to come from one area.
That's right.
So it's possible.
It's possible. We'll see. It's probably a stretch yet, but we haven't seen, you know, Corn Belt farmers do react to prices, but haven't reacted that heavily in the past. We'll see this time.
I have a different question for you for those heaviest counties where the change could occur in corn, to soybeans, that is. They appear to be Wisconsin, parts of Minnesota, a few of the Illinois and Iowa counties up in that corner. Fairly heavy livestock and dairy area. Were they heavy wheat? Are they likely not to go because of the livestock? I wondered how much of an impact might have.
Those areas are heavier livestock, were heavier livestock, and have always been heavier corn than this other areas. So that's partly tradition. That's partly a host of factors.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
That, of course, is Gary Schnitke. He's an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It's an interesting read. Visit the Farm Doc Daily website, farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, and look for his article. I'm Todd Gleason. Well, let's turn our attention on this Wednesday afternoon to the cash grain market. Pete Peterson is here. He's with the Anderson's Climbers facility. It's outside of Logansport, Indiana, where they make ethanol. Pete, thanks for being with us. Can you tell me just a bit about conditions there on the ground for old crop corn moving into your ethanol plant?
Right now everybody's kind of wanting to get the spring itch in the worst way. Beautiful weather out there, a little cool, but still sunny weather today. Corn is still moving. Guys are trying to fill some time before they can get in the fields. And, reports coming up here into next week, and some guys are hedging their bet by getting some stuff moved before that.
Yeah, so they're moving a little corn before that. Are the soybean processors still capable of garnering enough beans?
One of the local processors is sandbagging a little bit, I think, because they've got enough to get by for maybe 30 days. The other one locally is starting to maybe warm up a little bit. Maybe we get a little closer to spring, we'll see a little base improvement there on both sides.
Is your area heavier corn or soybeans in its normal rotation, and will farmers change this year, do you think?
Indiana, it's very hard to get a real good barometer across the country as far as who's planting what. We stay very close to normal rotation. Guys will stick to the 60-40 or 70-30 rotation. And this year, I don't see a whole lot of changes in that configuration from over the years. But there'll be a few fringe acres, but I don't think it's a huge amount this year.
Any concerns on the ethanol side at this time?
Not at this point. We're all kind of walking on pins and needles as we go through the new administration, and it's growing pains and changes in policy. But at this point, I think in general, kind of status quo, crude prices being a little bit lower has got everybody just maybe a little bit concerned on the side. But, the availability of corn and the market still remaining somewhat affordable for the ethanol side still makes things a little more attractive.
And your spot bid for corn?
See, spot bid for corn today, we're at 361 here at Climbers. Delphi, we're at 348, and on the bean side of Delphi, we're at 970.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Pete Peterson is with the Anderson's Climbers facility, where they produce ethanol outside of Logansport, Indiana. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 22nd day of March, 2017. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Hey, thanks for being with us today, Drew.
Thank you. It's a good day in some spots and something to look forward to out there for others. I think we're probably going to find ourselves looking at a chance for some good rain coming up here in some of the hard red winter wheat country. Good is a relative term. Some areas will do better than others. I think probably one of the biggest areas of interest will be the southwest plains. That would be from west Texas into southwestern Kansas. Those areas may not do that well with precipitation for a little while. They'll get some showers and some thunderstorms here with our first storm system, which occurs tomorrow night into Friday. But it's not going to be a real good soaking rain for that particular region. We have several other storms on the forecast charts here, but the first one that really brings a good opportunity for meaningful precipitation in the southwest plains is probably going to hold off until about a week from now. So there's still time here for things to not quite work as well as some folks would like to see. But I think we are at least seeing a notable trend change in the flow pattern across the United States that will bring some much-needed relief to the dryness across the plains eventually.
Bring relief to the folks that are in the southeast, or will they remain dry?
Well, portions of the southeast will get some timely rain, so the amounts that are going to occur in that particular area will probably be a little bit below normal. And so there will be an ongoing need for additional precipitation, but I don't think it's critical at this point. This is the planting season for that part of the country, and getting a little bit of light rainfall periodically while temperatures don't get excessively warm is a pretty good scenario for getting into the fields and being aggressive with planting. So I think for now, it's not a big deal. But a few weeks from now, we'll have to turn up the juice a little bit here and get it to rain a little bit more significantly in some of those areas. The heart of the U.S. Midwest will see many of these same storm systems that come in from the plains, and each one will likely bring enough moisture to the Midwest that will be plenty moist when those first days of April planting roll around, and it's just a couple of weeks away. So we may actually have a small potential for a little bit of brief delay in the initial planting in those southern parts of the Midwest because of wet fields. If we see every one of these storm systems that are stacked up to come across the region over this next 10 days actually verify, and I think there's a pretty good chance they will. Also, parts of the Delta will see fairly frequent rains, and so we probably won't get into the fields as aggressively there either for a fair amount of the coming week to 10 days. Some work has already been done, obviously, but it may not be as good a go here as we'd like to see it, at least over this next 10-day period.
Turn your attention southward. Any concerns of the second crop corn there?
My biggest concern about that second crop is the fact that some of it was planted relatively late. Seasonal rains in northern parts of Brazil usually cease when we get into April, and not necessarily early April. Sometimes it can be mid to late April, so we're hoping for a later date, or at least the producers there are. Because they were a little late getting some of this crop in the ground. The earlier that those seasonal rains end, the higher the potential is that they'll be running a little short on moisture when reproduction comes around for those most recently planted crops. A big part of the second season corn was planted early enough that it probably won't be a big deal. We do have plenty of moisture in the ground right now, and as long as it keeps raining for the next couple of weeks, I think they'll probably be able to coast through a big part of the growing season without a huge problem. But one or two rain events in late April would certainly put the icing on the cake for them.
Hey, Drew, thanks so much.
You bet. Have yourself a great day.
Oh, you too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.